Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on Lamed Bet Amud Aleph. We're continuing to discuss the Batei Arei Chuma. It says, Kol Shehu Lifnei Min HaChuma, Arehu KeBatei Arei Chuma. Anything inside the wall of the city has a din like Batei Arei Chuma. Chutz Min HaSadot, with the exception of the fields. That means other buildings, other structures within the city have the same din as houses in the city. The only exception are fields. Rabbi Meir Omer, Af HaSadot, even the fields are part and parcel of the din of Batei Arei Chuma, and we'll see in the Gemara more explication on this machloku between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. Bayit HaBanui B'Chuma, if you have a house that's built into the wall of the city, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Einu KeBatei Arei Chuma, Rabbi Yehuda says then it doesn't have a din of being in the walled city, because the house is in the wall, not in the walled city. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kotel HaChitzon Hu Chumato, the outer wall of the city is the wall of the house, and it picks it that it is inside the walls of the city. That is because, in general, the walls of the city were usually two walls, and then they used to fill them in between with filler material. And then many times the poor people used to either dig out or have houses that were between those two walls or were the walls of the city itself. And we'll see other structures that the Gemara mentions that create this type of effect of a wall, even though it's constructed of houses. Tanur banan, bayit. Ein li ela, bayit. So when the Torah says that this din applies to the selling of a house, it says, ish kimkor beit moshav ir chuma. So there it sounds like we're speaking about a bayit. That's the limiting factor here. And that's what it's spoken about in terms in arei chuma. So now, minayin rabot, batei badim, ubatei merchatzaot, umigdalot, vishovchin, uborot, vishichin, umearot. How do I know to include all these other structures, including the olive press, the bathhouses, the towers, the birdcotes, the cisterns, and the built-out ditches in the caves? Tamalomar, Asher Ba'ir, that is found inside the city. The pasuk says, "V'im lo yigael ad malot lo ashanat mima, v'kama bayit Asher Ba'ir." So bayit would seem to indicate that it's limited to bayit, but then you say Asher Ba'ir. Anything that's found in the city seems to have that same din. You would think to include also fields as well, meaning anything in the city, because Asher Ba'ir. That's the balance between the word bayit and Asher Ba'ir, which is that it has to be something similar to a bayit. It has to be a structure, and not just the fields of the city, and that is Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. The view of Rabbi Yehuda, as we saw in the Mishnah, that structures are included with the din of Batei Arei Chuma, but the sadot are not included. Rabbi Meir Omer, bayit, in li ela bayit. Once again, the word bayit limits you to just a bayit. Minayin rabot, batei badim, ubatei merchatzaot, umigdalot, vishovchim, uborot, shichim, umearot, vafilu sadot. So he has the same list of structures as Rabbi Yehuda, but then he includes sadot as well. Tamalomar, asher ba'ir. So he says, anything in the city, anything found in the city, is governed by the rules of batei arei chuma. And therefore, sadot's fields in the city will have that same din. V'hala ha'kti bayit. So if you're going to include everything in the end, then why write bayit at all? Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rav Katina, chutzit u'metzula ika beinayu. There is a nafkamina between them, which is these two areas, and we'll explain in a second what those are. V'hatanyo, and we have a breita benichuta that supports that understanding. Chutzit u'metzula, Rabbi Meir Omer, kibbatim. They have a din like houses, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kisadot, that they have a din like fields. So in the end, Rabbi Meir agrees that the word bayit is limiting in some way, and it qualifies asher ba'ir, which seems to indicate that it has to be a structure. So that means anything that is an agricultural field, both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda agree, are not included in the din of batei arei chuma, because it's not a bayit, it's not a structure in the city. And everybody agrees that structures within the city have a din of batei arei chuma, because they're included asher ba'ir. The one nafkamina, the one difference between them, are the areas of the city that are not ra'ui for agrarian usage, but they are usable for building of structures or houses. But nothing has yet to be built over there. Question is, what's the status of those areas? According to Rabbi Yehuda, they're not structures, so they're not included. According to Rabbi Meir, since they do not have a purpose of a sadeh, then they are included under bayit. So, in essence, what Rabbi Yehuda says is, everything's got to be like a bayit. If you're not like a bayit, then you're a sadeh. So you're a structure, otherwise you're a sadeh. Rabbi Meir looks at it the other way around. If you're a sadeh, then you're not included. Anything that's not a sede is included. And the nafkamina, these two areas of kusit umitsula, Rashi describes them in the following manner. He says that the damol bayit, the kusit and mitsula are included according to Rabbi Meir because they're similar to a house. The labnei zrianinu, because they're not plantable, they have no agrarian use. Viru'uyin lebinyan bayit, but they are ra'uy, or they are usable for building things. Kusit litol misham avanim. Kusit is a source for stones or rocks to build a house. And then a mitsula is litol mehen chol, is to take sand. So Rashi says they are useful in the building of houses. Now, you could read it in one of two ways. Either ruin the binyan bayit in that location itself, or you could explain it the way seemingly it reads in Rashi with the emendation of the Shita Mekubetzet, is that these are areas that you source the materials for building houses, and therefore they have the same din as a bayit. If you look at the Rabbeinu Gershom, he translates them in a similar fashion. He writes, kusit is slaim, seems to be there that it's bedrock. Umitsula is umka ba'alma. It's a depth, it's a ditch, sheish ba'mayim, that has water in it. She'enon ruin lizriya. They are not plantable. Ve'enon domim kokach lebeitira. But they're not exactly livable space. So the question is, which side of the divide do they fall on in terms of their classification? The Balei HaTosafot then bring a third interpretation over here. And he brings in the Rashbam in Baba Batra, that chutzit is litolemenu zechuchit. It's an area where they used to take sand to make glass from. It would make sense because the word chutzit has the word chol inside of it. So that would make a lot of sense. Umitsula is kamo mitsula shel dagim, which would be a reference to the river or river bed, something along the lines of what the Rabbeinu Gershom said over here. So again, these are areas that are not usable for planting. They do have source materials for building, or they possibly can be used for building itself. They are areas that you could clear or you could utilize the raw assets that are there to build or work with. So that's why, according to Rabbi Meir, they're included and have the same din as Batei Rechuma. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, they're excluded because they're not structures. And something that's not a structure is not included. Bayit abanoi bechuma. You have a house that's built into the wall of the city. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, eno kebatei Rechuma. Rabbi Yehuda says it's not part of the city walls. And we saw Rabbi Shimon had the opposite opinion. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Ushnehem Mikra Echad Darshu. They both learned the same pasuk, or their source is from the same pasuk in Yoshua, where Rachav HaZonah, when she takes care of the miraglim from Yoshua, and hides them, and then sends them off, when she is helping them to escape, it says, V'toridem b'chavel be'ad achalon. She drops a rope for them to allow them to climb out of the window. Ki beita bakir hachoma. The house that she lives in is in the wall of the city. So if you go out the window with a rope, you're going to be outside the city. Ubechuma hi yoshavet, and she lives inside of the wall. So Rabbi Shimon savar kipashtei dekra. So Rabbi Shimon says, like the simple reading of the pasuk, is that ki beita bekira chuma ubechuma hi yoshavet means that she's within the wall of the city, because that's what ubechuma hi yoshavet. She lives in the wall, but she's also inside the wall of the city. She lives in the wall, but that's distinct from the city that is the walled city. So he is midayek from the fact that she's in the wall and not in the city itself. And so he says that when you're in the wall, you're not in the city. Maybe Shimon says it's the same thing. Once you're inside the walls of the city, you're inside the walled city. And even though you're in the wall itself, that's still classified as inside of the city. The next Mishnah here, Shigagotea Chomota, a city in which the roofs of the houses are the Choma, that you have houses that are placed together or adjacent to each other, and then they create the wall of the city. And that's how Rashi says, Shaloi Kifua Choma, they didn't put a wall around it, Eli Kifua Bebatim, they built houses in rows, Utkvota Batim, Zuluzo Kechoma, and they are so close together, or they are row houses to the point where they basically simulate the effect of creating a wall. That's what Rashi explains over here. The Rabbeinu Gershom brings that explanation as well. And then he brings Ve'ika Damre, Shigagotea Mishupaim Ad Haaretz, that the roofs of the houses are in a slant down to the ground. Ve'en Hein HaChomot, and they act as the wall of the city and the wall of the house. So the roof of the house is not flat, but the roof of the house is on a slant. And that slant creates both the roof and outer wall of the house, as well as the wall of the city. And so that might be distinct from what we were describing in the previous Mishnah. Vishe'ena mikwefet choma mimot Yeshua bin Nun, or that does not have a wall from the time of Yeshua bin Nun, eina ki batei arei choma. They do not have a din of batei arei choma. So both of these do not have a din of batei arei choma because they are not walled cities. Either because the wall is created by adjoining all these houses together, and that simulates or creates the wall, not like what we saw before in the previous Mishnah, where there's a wall, and then they put a house into the wall of the city. There the wall existed first, and the house came afterwards. Here the houses are the wall. And with the Yeshua bin Nun, the idea being that it has to be a walled city from the time that the Kedushat HaAretz took effect, because these cities carry with them a certain level of Kedusha, which we'll see in a second, and that Kedusha has to have come from a point in time. That point is when they came into the land and they conquered the land with Yeshua bin Nun, and that's what gives it or imbues it with that Kedusha. So if you had a wall at that time, does it have a status of a Arei Choma? If it's not, then it's not considered an Arei Choma if it was built later. Ve'elohein batei Arei Choma. Here is a list of the requirements or places that are classified as batei Arei Choma. Shlosh chatzirot shoshne batim. So first of all, the qualification is that you have to have three courtyards that have a minimum of two houses in each courtyard. It's a minimum of three courtyards and six houses, two houses to each courtyard. Mukefet choma miot Yeshua bin Nun, that has a wall around it from the time of Yeshua bin Nun. Kegon, for example, katsra hayishana shel Tzipori, the either neighborhood or suburb of Tzipori. Tzipori is a well-known city in the time of Bayit Sheni, and in the Roman period post the Churban. It still exists today in the central lower Galil. You can go visit it. The ruins of the city are there. And this is describing what is seemingly an older part of the city, or that the city Tzipori was built over or near a biblical city, which some identify as Katron. It's actually a yeshuv that's very close to Tzipori that's called Katron. And that might be a reference to that biblical city. And this might be what's being mentioned over here, Katsra Yishana Shel Tzipori, that section or that area of Tzipori that is the older city or from the original city. Ve'chakra Shel Gush Chalav, and as well either the neighborhood or the suburb of the area of Gush Chalav, that's also known today well. There's an Arab village called Gish Chalav, and you can go there. There's a nice hike that starts from the bottom of the city, and at the beginning of the hike over there, you can see the ruins of ancient cities. Some of those are from the time of Bayit Sheni. There's a shul there as well. But some of them are even older, a city that came from the time of Bayit Rishon. V'yudpat Hayishana, and the older Yudpat. V'gamla. Now we know the city of Gamla, which is found in the lower Golan. It's at the base, the lower western side of the Golan, eastern side of the Galil, the northeast end of the Kinneret. That's a Gamla that's written about in Josephus. It's where the Jews, in the time of the Mered, take a huge stand in Gamla. But it may not be the reference that the Mishnah is making, because that's Gamla from Bayit Sheni. We're looking for a Gamla from Bayit Rishon, and therefore this Gamla might be a different Gamla, and likely is a different Gamla. U Gidod, V'charid, V'ono, V'Yerushalayim. These are additional cities. Yerushalayim is known. The other cities are identified, like Ono, which would be similar to Kiryat Ono, maybe the modern-day Kiryat Ono, or somewhere in that area, and Hadid, east of Lod, or in the area of today what's known as the Ben Shemin Forest, is also in the Ezor HaMerkaz, and these are all areas that were in Binyamin and Yehuda, in the area of the Merkaz. So these are cities or areas that we do know of, and we know that were settled from the time of Bayit Rishon. And anything similar to them. Tan Rabbanan, Choma Velo Shur Igar. It has to be a wall, and not, the word Shur is used in the Torah to mean a wall. Alei Shur by Yosef, Rashi explains over there that they used to climb up on the walls to see Yosef. So Shur is a wall. Igar is a roof. So it says that it has to be a wall, and not a wall created by roofs. Saviv, around, mean that the wall has to surround the city, prat l'Tveria shiama chomata, which it comes to exclude Tveria, whereby the Kinneret is the wall of Tveria. Tveria had walls on three sides, and the fourth wall was the Kinneret. That is the safek the Gemara has in the Megillah as to whether it has a classification as a walled city, Mimot Yeshua Binun, because of that wall. It's not classified like that for Batei Rechoma, because here there's a specific requirement of Saviv. But by the Kriyat HaMegillah and the walled cities from the time Yeshua Binun, there may not be a requirement that it be Saviv. It just can't be a Arei HaPrazi. It can't be an open city. So that's the Safek that the Gemara has with regards to reading Megillah in Tveria. Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi Omer, Asher lo Choma. Afa pi shein lo achshav, vaya lo kodem lechen. Even though it does not currently have a wall, if it had a wall at the time of Yeshua Binun, it continues to have that kedusha, even though the wall is no longer extant. Now, the way that we have it written in our Gemara is Asher lo choma is a lamed vav aleph. It's a word that is combining two forms of the word lo, or it's writing the word lo lamed aleph malay with a vav in there. Rashi claims that that's what's written in the Torah. It says lo ktiv lamed vav aleph is written in the Torah. Mashma lo or mashma lo. It means both not and does have klomar. Ein lo achshav. So the drasha is, Asher lo choma, it does not have a wall now, but lo choma, it did at some point have a wall. And that's the way Rashi learns it, but Rashi's view is that that's the text that we find in the Torah. The Baal Yad Tosafot already note that we don't have that. In our Chumashim, we don't have anything of that sort. The text in our Torah is Lamed Aleph, and it's a Kri and Ktiv. The Ktiv is Lamed Aleph. And the Kri is Lamed Vav. It says Asher Lo Choma, which is written there that does not have a wall. The Kri, the way we read it, is Lamed Vav. And of course, you can come up with the same drusha in that way that Rashi does with the Lamed Vav Aleph. It's just written Asher Lo and then Lo Choma. The Rabbeinu Gershom on the next Amud way down says Asher Lo Choma, Afa Pish Ein Lo Achshav, Delo Ktiv Vahaya Lo Choma, Ela Asher Lo. That it did. Mashma dafilu hayalo kodem lechein. So it's not that it has a wall, but rather Asher lo choma at some point that had a wall. So he claims it's not even from the word lo, lamed vav versus lamed aleph. He just says that's the wording of the pasuk. Makes it sound like Asher lo choma at any point if it had a wall. That's sufficient as long as that wall was there at the time of Yeshua Binun. So that teaches us that even though the city no longer is walled, nevertheless, the city has that kedusha. That's remnant from the time of Yeshua Binun when it did have a wall. Now the Gemara continues. Ve'elohen batei arechuma. The Mishnah gives examples of cities. Tano. We have a braita that explicates on the Mishnah. Gamlo b'Galil. Gamlo is in the Galil. So that's a little bit questionable because Gamlo is already into the Golan or into Eber Yardain. Might have been that they looked at a more expansive form of the Galil. Ugidod ve'Eber Yardain. V'chadid. Ve'ono v'Yerushalayim v'Yehuda. We already mentioned that Hadid is near Ben Shemen, Ono is near Kiryat Ono, and Yerushalayim obviously are in the area of Yehuda. And the Gemara says about this Breita, Maikamar, what is the Breita saying over here? Rashi says, V'chiyen mir mukevet choma b'Galil ela Gamla. The Breita makes it sound that there's only these cities in these areas. There's only Gamla in the Galil. There's only Gedod in Eber Yardain, and there are only these three cities in Yehuda. That seems to be ludicrous, because we know that there are more cities than just these number of cities that are mentioned here. That's how Rashi explains the question here. Tosafot even takes it a step further and says, why didn't the Gemara ask this about the Mishnah? The Mishnah also only has a limited list of cities. Why don't we ask the same question on the Mishnah? As the Tosafot says, it's because the Breita is more exact and particular about where these cities are and their locations. Whereas the Mishnah doesn't tell us where those cities are, it just gives you a list of cities. In addition, the Mishnah says, kigon, like, and then it ends off with v'chenka yotzeben, and other cities that are similar to them. So the cities that are listed in the Mishnah are cities that are examples, but there's a broader list of cities that we would have included. So the Mishnah opens that possibility. On the other hand here, the Breita closes any other possibilities and says there's this very limited list of cities. Therefore, it's very hard to understand the Breita, especially if the Breita is coming to explain the Mishnah, which traditionally when the Gemara says Tana, Tana means that's a Breita that specifically explicates on the Mishnah. If that's the case here, how is this braita helping us understand the Mishnah? So Amar Abaye, Hachi Kamar. This is what it means. Ad Gamla B'Galil. Until Gamla in the Galil. Ad Gedod B'Ever Yardain. Until Gedod in Ever Yardain. V'Chadid V'Ono B'Yushalayim B'Yehuda. And until those points within Yehuda. So even after Abaye clarifies the braita, it's still not clear exactly what he is saying over here. And Rashi claims, or it seems that Rashi is saying, that these were the outermost points of areas that would be included in the areas that were Kadosh from the time of Yoshua bin Nun. And therefore you've been saying, Ad Gamla bit Galil. So now, if Gamla is the Gamla that we know today, then you would have to say it's the easternmost city in the Galil that's still included in those that were Nitkadesh, Ayodei Yoshua bin Nun. If it is a northern point, then certainly it's not Gamla, but rather it's got to be something further north and a different city that is up north with a similar name or a similar sound to it. In the Ever Yardain, Gedod would then be the furthest east in Ever Yardain. And then in Yehuda, it would give you a area's northernmost parts of Yehuda, which are still included in those times from Yeshua bin Nun. That would be the way that Rashi seems to explain it. The Ravenu Gershom, on the other hand, says, Komar, Kol ha'ayarot shebigalil shiyeterot migamlo. So he seems to be saying that means that any city that is bigger than these cities meet the minimum standard for a city and to be classified as a batei arechuma. And then what it's saying is that and all other cities that are greater in size than these cities, they also could qualify to be cities from the time of Yeshua bin Nun. I would have suggested possibly that it's also a time frame, which means that any city built before these cities definitely had a wall then from the time of Yoshua bin Nun. Ad Gamla means that that was the latest city that was built that still has a wall from the time of Yoshua bin Nun. So any city that's more ancient than that would be, any walled city that's more ancient than that had a wall from the time of Yoshua bin Nun. And that's another possible explanation. It's not clear. It means ad. Ad means until, but it's not clear what the ad is. So I gave you three different possibilities as to what it means over here. Rava Amar, that the list in the Braita is coming to dismiss the other possibilities, which is Gamla B'Galil. Gamla B'Galil comes Lafuke Gamla D'Sharetzot, to tell you only Gamla in the Galil is included. If you have Gamlot that are found in other areas in Yehuda and Ever Yardain, they're not included in this list. Gedod Ever Yardain, Lafuke Gedod D'Sharetzot. The Gedod that's found in Ever Yardain is the only one that is. If you find Gedod in other areas, other geographic locations, that's not something that had a wall from the time of Yeshua bin Nun. Inach, delo, ika, karabatayu, lo, itztrichle. The other cities that don't have cities with the same name in other locations, you don't need to mention them. So the Braita only pulled out from the list in the Mishnah a subset of cities that have multiple cities within Eretz Yisrael that have that same name. And what it's pointing out to you is that the list in the Mishnah of Gamla, Gamla is only the Gamla of the Galil, not the Gamla of another location. Only the Gdod of Ever Yadain, not the Gdod in another location. So then, that would have to be same is true for those three cities that are mentioned with regards to Yehuda, Chadid, Ono, and Yerushalayim, would also be those locations in Yehuda, and not other locations. The Gemara gets sidetracked for a second, and says, V'Yerushalayim, Mimachlat Ba. How come Yerushalayim is included in this list? How could it be that if you sell a house within Yerushalayim, that that house would be sold permanently, like the din of Batei Rechuma? V'hatanyo, don't we have a braita in the Gemara in Baba Kama? Asarat Dvarim Nemru B'Yerushalayim. In the laws or takanot that are put into place by Yoshua bin Nun, over there it says that there are 10 things said about Yerushalayim. Ein Abayit Chalutba. One of those rules is that you cannot sell a house permanently in the city, or does the houses there don't have a din of Batei Arei Choma. And Rashi says the reason being, because Kasavar lo nitchalka Yerushalayim l'shvatim. So he says, because Yerushalayim was never distributed as property to the Shvatim, then nobody owns the property in Yerushalayim. If you don't own the property in Yerushalayim, you can't sell the property so that it will then be sold to another party to have it permanently, because nobody owns it. You have to own it in the first place to sell it, or it has to be your achuzah in order for it to be relevant that it's a bayit ben ir choma. And that just doesn't happen within Yerushalayim. Okay, but then you have a problem. Why is Yerushalayim in the list? Samar Rabbi Yochanan, Ki Yerushalayim du mekevet koma min Yeshua bin Nun. Veloki Yerushalayim, Deilu Yerushalayim, Ena Batim Chalut Ba. Yerushalayim is an example of a city that has a wall from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, but it is not an example of a city that has the din of Batei Arei Choma. So yes, it's a walled city from the time Yeshua ben Nun. That's why you read the Megillah there on the 15th. On the other hand, it does not have a din of Batei Arei Choma because it was Lo Nitchalka Lishvatim. Veilu Hocha Bayit Chalut Ben. But in a regular walled city or in the other cities that are mentioned here or any other walled city from the time Yeshua ben Nun, they would have a din of Batei Arei Choma. And if you sold a house in that city, it would be a permanent sale. Rav Ashi Amar, the Rav Ashi trying to deal with this problem that we have with regards to the Yerushalayim aspect is, Lava Mar Yosef Trey Kadesh Havu. Didn't Rav Yosef in another context tell us that Kadesh is a city that's found in multiple places? You can see that in Sefer Yeshua, that the Kadesh appears in Yehuda, in Naphtali. There are a number of Kadeshes that appear around Eretz Yisrael. And just like there, the answer to our question was that there are two different cities with the same name. Hachanami, Trei Yerushalayim Havu. So too, with regards to Yerushalayim, there are two Yerushalayims, which is a little harder to figure out because Kadesh, we do find evidence of the fact that there were multiple cities with that name. Yerushalayim, we don't really find that there are multiple cities with that name, and it would probably be odd for have multiple cities with that name. So someone has suggested that the multiple cities doesn't literally mean different cities, but it means even within Yerushalayim, we know that the city was expanded a number of times, and that there were new parts and older parts of Yerushalayim, so some of those parts have a din of being Arei Choma, and other parts do not have the din of Arei Choma. But in that way, he answers the problem of how it is that Yerushalayim is included in the list of our Mishnah, but in the Braita and Baba Kama, it says Yerushalayim doesn't have a din of Batei Arei Choma, and so the answer is, there are two different Yerushalayims. Again, whether it means literally, or it means just that there are different areas of Yerushalayim, some that are and some that are not. Either way, that would solve the problem rather than the solution that Rabbi Yochanan gave, which was to indicate that it was just an example of a walled city from time Yeshua ben Nun, but not an example of a Batei Arei Choma. Now the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Ishmael b'Rabbi Yossi. We have a Braita from Rabbi Ishmael b'Rabbi Yossi. Lama manu chachamim et elu. Why did the chachamim enumerate these cities? Kishe alu bnei agola matzu elu v'kidushum. Because when the exiles came back in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, they found these cities and they sanctified them. Avo rishonot batlu mishabatnak dushat aretz. But the original cities lost their kedusha when the land was destroyed and conquered by the Babylonians. The kedushat aretz was removed. And obviously he believes, Kasabar, Kedusha Rishuna, Kitsha the Shaita, Velo Kitsha the Tidabo, that the Kedusha Rishuna that was imbued in Eretz Yisrael and possibly in Yerushalayim was a Kedusha that was of a temporary nature. It was only in effect until they were thrown out of the land, until they were exiled. But once they were exiled, that Kedusha went away. And therefore, when they came back at the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, they had to re-sanctify the cities. And the cities that we are speaking about in these lists are cities that the Bnei Agola were Mekadesh, and that's why they have a din of Arei Choma. Viriminhi, can you really say this? Amar Rabbi Yishmael b'Rabbi Yossi, v'chi elu b'ilvad ayu, are these the only cities? Balok v'anemar, doesn't it say in Dvarim, Shishim ir, kochevel argov, kolel arim bitzurot? There are like 60 cities all along the area that they conquered, and they were all fortified cities. So then you see that there are tons and tons of walled cities. So why is the list limited to these cities when you have so many other cities? So why did the Chachamim count or enumerate these? When the Bnei Agola came up, they founded these cities, v'kidushum, and they sanctified them. When it says kidushum, why would they sanctify them? You just said before, you don't need to sanctify them. Ele manaum. They enumerated them. Velo elu bilvat. This is not an exhaustive list. Ele kosha talecha mesorah biyadecha me'avotecha. Anything that you have a mesorah about from your forefathers, shemukvevet choma miyot Yeshua ben Nun, that we know it had a wall from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, kol mitzvot alalu noheget ba. All these mitzvot have application there. Mnei shekdusha rishuna kidsha l'shaita, v'kidsha l'tid lavo. Because the Kedushat Aretz from the time of Yeshua ben Nun was permanent, and therefore the Kedusha remains, so you just need to identify the cities, You don't need to do anything in order to be Mekadesh the cities. So the obvious problem is that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi is the author of both of these braitot. And in one braita, he says that the Kedusha Rishona was not permanent. And everyone that came in the time of Bayit Sheni, they had to re-Mekadesh all these areas in order for these cities to be counted as Arei Choma. And that happened in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. And the cities that we're enumerating are the cities that they actually were Mekadesh when they come up in the time of Bayit Sheni. In the second braita, he says that all cities from the time of Yoshua ben Nun have permanent Kedusha. These are ones we know about. But if you have a Mesorah, or if there are other ones that you know about, they'd also be Kadosh because the original Kedusha that was imbued by Yoshua ben Nun is a permanent Kedusha. So now, there are a number of things to address over here. One of which is, what does it mean, Kol HaMitzvot Halalu? What are the mitzvot of Arei Chumah? We've only mentioned one mitzvah so far, which is the mitzvah of the din of selling a bayit in an Arei Chumah, which is the din that it is sold permanently once you make such a sale. So Tosafot over here notes that the other additional mitzvot that apply are that Batei Arei Chumah have a din of Shiluach Mitzoraim. The requirement to send Mitzoraim out of a city is only applicable in walled cities, in Arei Chumah. Also, the din of Avanim Nugaot, stones or structure pieces from a house that had Nigaim, that have to be removed from the house and then put outside the city, that's also a rule that only applies to Arei Chumah. And in addition, the requirement for no halana tamate, that first of all, once the mate's taken out of the city, you can't bring it back in, and also not to leave the mate overnight in the city, that's also a din with regards to Arei Chumah. So there are a number of mitzvot that are associated with an Arei Chumah, not just this din of Batei Arei Chumah. And that's what it means, Kol HaMitzvot Halalu, all these mitzvot, no heged ba, that they have these mitzvot. The second thing is, according to the first version of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi, it says here that they were Mekadesh, these cities. Question is, how were they Mekadesh the cities? Rashi over here says, and he brings from the Gemara in Shavuot, Mekadshila b'shtei todot, u'b'shir, u'beitin, mehalchin, u'shtei todot achrehen. They use two korbanei todah, and they have the beitin, and they have a shir, all the process that's described in Sefer Ezra. So the problem with that is, in the Bayit Tosafot already note, this is, Rashi in Shavuot says that was done to be Mekadesh Yerushalayim. That's what's Mekadesh, the walls of Yerushalayim, and the areas that have Kedushat Yerushalayim. That's not a broader way to be Mekadesh all the Arei Chumah in Eretz Yisrael. It's the way to do it for Yerushalayim. Yet Rashi is taking that and saying, okay, that's how they were Mekadesh all the Arei Chumah. Tosafot says Rashi himself in Shavuot contradicts that. And Tosafot just writes in the end, he says, Lo yadati heyachayu mekadshin otan. I don't know how they were Mekadesh them. And Rashi in Shavuot says the similar thing, that the Arei Chumah, it's not clear how they were Mekadesh them. It could be that they might have been a derivative Kedushah of Kedushat Yerushalayim. I sent out the Mikorot on this, but Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal has a piece where he wants to suggest that the difference between the Kedushah of Yoshua ben Nun and the Kedushah of Ezra and Nehemiah, or the time of Zerubbabel, is that the Kedushah of Yoshua ben Nun starts from the outside in, which is its Kedushat Haaretz, and then only Kedushat Yerushalayim. Whereas the Kedushah of Ezra starts from Yerushalayim and then goes outward, and then that Kedushah creates or engenders the Kedushah in the other parts of Eretz Yisrael. And that's what makes the Kedushah of, first of all, Yerushalayim permanent, but also why this Kedushah Shniyah has more lasting power than Kedushah Rishonah. He does that to explain the unusual Shita of the Rambam. I'm not going to spend so much time on this. We've done this in other locations where we spoke about Kedushah Rishonah, Kedushah Shniyah, and the permanence of the Kedushah. There are many opinions within the Rishonim with regards to this. Yerushalayim separate from the Aretz, and the question as to whether Kedushah Rishonah or Kedushah Shniyah is the permanent Kedushah, or neither of them are permanent, like the Ravid makes the suggestion of such, that there is no Kedushah permanent, and therefore, according to the Ravid, you can walk onto Har HaBayit today without any problem, because there is no Kedushah. So, there are a multitude of opinions with regards to this. I'm just pointing out Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal, because it might help explain how they were Mekadesh the Arei Chumah, even though there was no process of Kedushah. It might have derived from Yerushalayim when they were Mekadesh Yerushalayim. So here we have a stira in the two opinions of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi. So how do we deal with it? Ibai Dema, Trei Tanayim, Valibe de Rabbi Shmuel. It's very straightforward. You have two Tanayim quoting Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi, and each one of them has a different Mesorah or a different view as to what Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi said. V'Ibai Dema, Chad Minayu, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yossi. And some say that it was a mix-up, that one of the Girsaot should read not Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi, but rather Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yossi. That's why, again, we changed the girsa on the previous amud, which is, because Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Omer at the Tanya. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Asher lo chuma, here again, the Lamed Vav Aleph, Avo Pishen lo achshav, Vayalo kodemaken. Even though it doesn't have a wall now, but it had a wall before this. As Rashi notes over here, because just like the Arei Choma, even though they're destroyed, still can maintain their Kedusha, so too Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael maintain their Kedusha even after they are destroyed. And the fact that it maintains its Kedusha shows you that the Kedusha Rishona has a certain amount of permanence to it. Now the truth is that it's not Mukhrach, that that's the view of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi. Even if Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi felt that Kedusha Rishona was Nitbatla, Kedusha Rishona is not permanent, still during the time of the Bayit Rishon, before the Churban HaBayit, before the Churban of Eretz Yisrael, it would have been true that a city without a wall would have had Kedusha, because it had a wall from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. So it's not Mukhrach that the view of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi is aligned with that of Kedusha Rishona. Nevertheless, the Gemara does that here, and assumes that that likely is the reasoning behind Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi, and that helps us to figure out that why there are two opinions in Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi by assigning one of them to Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi. Mein taima demand amar kedusha rishona kidsha l'shaita v'lo kidsha l'atid avo. What's the reasoning behind the position that believes that the kedusha rishona was not permanent? It was temporary until the land was destroyed or conquered. Dichtiv, because they quote the pasuk from Nehemiah, Yesu kol ha'kahal b'nei ha'gola ha'shavim min ha'shevi sukot v'yeshvu ba'sukot. So the Pasuk is saying that they celebrated Sukkot in that time period, and the description of the holiday of Sukkot, and they're making the Sukkot, is contrasted with the fact that there's never been a celebration of Sukkot like this from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. So Gemara asks, what do you mean? Efshar ba David v'lo asu Sukkot? How could it be that at the pinnacle of the Malchut of David, when everything was quiet and the Jews could keep the Halachot and were following the Torah, that they didn't keep Sukkot? Atshubai Ezra? And suddenly Ezra comes and suddenly they have a celebration of Sukkot that never took place? Ella, Mekish bi'atam bi'mei Ezra, bi'atam bi'mei Yoshua. The connection is not about the Sukkot themselves. The Sukkot, yes. But the comparison to the Mimot Yeshua ben Nun, there's been nothing like this. Is because ma biatam bimei Yeshua manu shmitim biovlot yikidshu arei choma, that they began to count shmita and yovel and they were sanctifying the walled cities. Af biatam bimei Ezra manu shmitim biovlot yikidshu arei choma. The same processes began again at the time of Ezra because there was a new kedusha being imbued, which implies that the old kedusha of Yeshua was terminated and now they had to imbue with the new kedusha. But that it gives a equivalence to the Biat Yoshua, to Biat Ezra, to tell you that the first Kedusha was not permanent, and therefore Ezra had to then create a second Kedusha. What's the reference to? It can't be about the context in which it's written, which is Sukkot, because it can't be that they didn't keep Sukkot from all the time Yeshua ben Nun until the time of Ezra. So what is it about this new coming that never happened since the time of Yeshua ben Nun? So it must be something that was not mentioned here, but a process or something that you underwent, which was the being Mekadesh Yerushalayim and the whole process of being re-Mekadesh, the city and the Arei Choma. So to your question, which is, are you so certain that that is what they were comparing to the time Yeshua ben Nun? Ve'omer. The Pasuk says, V'yachah Hashem lakecha la'aretz asher Yeshua botecha v'yirishta. Mekesh Yerushatcha v'yirushat avotecha. It compares your Yerusha to the Yerusha of your forefathers. Just like the original settling of the land came with all of these items, so too, your coming and inheriting the land, reclaiming the land, has all of these items. And, as Rashi notes over here, this pasuk is written after the galut, because it says, that this is after Hashem already has rachamim and brings you back. It says there that you're going to settle the land. So that settling of the land is like the settling of the land of your forefathers. And just like your forefathers, they created a Yerusha with these items and this Kedusha, so too your coming will also reinitiate these forms of Kedusha. So he has an alternate Pasuk which indicates that there is something going on at the time of the Yerushat Ezra that is similar to the Yerushat Yoshua. And therefore, this would then corroborate that by saying that there's something about the time of Ezra that was similar to the time of Yeshua ben Nun in Sefer Ezra. The other opinion that says Kedusha Rishona was permanent, then what exactly is going on here in Sefer Ezra? He has to interpret the word Sukkot figuratively and not literally. And that is that they, that time, asked for the Yitzer of Avodah Zarah to be taken away, that by Rachmei al Yitzer de Avodah Zarah Ubatle, that's the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Ve'agin Zechuta Alayu Kisuka, and the Zechut of Ezra protected them like a Sukkah, which is the view of the Din of Sukkah, the Machloket and the Gemara in Sukkah, as to whether Sukkot in the Midbar was Sukkot Mamash or an Anei HaKavod. But if they are Anei HaKavod, that means that they are a form of protection or divine protection. And similarly over here, Ezra affords them the type of divine protection that they haven't had since the time of Yoshua ben Nun, when they conquered the land and they were miraculously able to take over the areas and go to battle. So too over here, it was a miraculous time in which Ezra was able to protect them and to rid themselves of the Yetzer of Avodah Zarah. Behinu, dekakopid kra ilavei, and you can see that that's the case because the Pasuk over there makes an interesting distinction between there and everywhere else. Because everywhere else, Yeshua, behold duchta aktiv Yehoshua. Everywhere else in Tanakh, when it mentions Yeshua, it mentions it and spells it the way that you would, Yehoshua. Behach aktiv Yeshua. And over there it says Yehoshua without the name Yehoshua. There it says Yeshua. So now, Bishlama Moshe lo bayrachme. So what it is it's a veiled criticism of Yeshua ben Nun, which is, I understand why Moshe Rabbeinu could not ask for the ridding of the Yetzer of Avodah Zarah, the lo haba zchuta de Eretz Yisrael, because he didn't go into Eretz Yisrael, he didn't have the zchut of Eretz Yisrael in order to do that. Ela Yeshua, the haba zchuta de Eretz Yisrael, Yeshua that did have the zchut of Eretz Yisrael, amai lo li bayrachme. Why didn't he ask for the Yetzer of Avodah Zarah to be removed? And so why did it have to wait all the way to the time of Ezra to rid themselves of the Yetzer of Avodah Zarah? Had they done it much earlier, it would have saved a lot of trouble. So there's a veiled criticism of Yeshua. Why didn't he do it? And that's why he says the comparison between Ezra and Yeshua is one of the idea that this was a miraculous time and a time where they were afforded divine protection. But it's also a veiled criticism of Yeshua that Ezra does something that Yeshua should have done. And that's why there's a difference in the spelling over here, to tell you that they have that veiled criticism. I always note the Gra that's famous for saying that when the Yetzer of Zarah was taken away, Pascha Nevuah Mi'Yisrael, they're stopping Nevi'im in monks Klal Yisrael. And that's because we, in Judaism, don't believe that there's anything inherently evil, inherently good. We just believe that there are drives. And the drives can be manifest in good and bad. And Avodah Zarah is a manifestation of a drive to draw closer to God. But so is Nevuah, also a manifestation of a drive to grow closer to God. So when you have that Yetzer around, it can be manifest in Nevuah, manifest in Avodah Zarah, but you have Nevuah. When you eliminate the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah, you also eliminate Nevuah because that drive to get closer to Hashem no longer exists. And that's why there's no Nevuah. And that might have been maybe Yeshua's calculation as to why maybe it wasn't worthwhile to get rid of the Yetzer Hara because of the fact that it would have also eliminated Nevuah me Klal Yisrael. Now, what about the fact, V'aktev Asher Yeshua B'techa V'rishta? What does he do about that pasuk? The second pasuk of evidence that's brought, that there are two Yerushot, Hachikamar, came into Yeshua B'techa Yerashtata. Because your forefathers already inherited the land, therefore you inherit the land, meaning that you're coming back to resettle what is already kadosh. You're coming to reclaim what already is kadosh, what already belongs to your forefathers. Now, the Gemara asks the question, Omi manu shmitim v'yovlot. Wait a minute. How did they count shmitim v'yovlot? There were a number of items that were mentioned in terms of what happened in the time of Ezra, just like that happened in the time of Yoshua ben Nun. And the three items were Manu Shmitim, Yovlot, Vikichu, Arei Choma. So now that would assume that you could do Shmitim and Yovlot. How could that be? Hashta Mishigalu Shevet Ruvain Veshevet Gad Vechatzi Shevet Menashe Bitlu Yovlot. In the time of Beit Rishon, when the Melech Ashur puts the Aseret HaShvatim and the areas to the Eivar Yerdain into Galut, then there was no longer Yovlot because you don't have Yoshveh HaAleha. Ezra Dichtiv Beit. In Ezra, where you have a much more limited grouping of Klal Yisrael that come, Kol HaKal Ke'echad, all the people that came up with Ezra, Abba Ribo Alafim, 40,000, V'Shesh Meot, V'Shishim, 660 haba mani. How could they count it? The Tanya, Mishigalu, Shevet Ruvein, Shevet Gad, Bechatzi, Shevet Minashev, but lo bitlo yovlot. They stopped counting the yovlot. Shneema ukratim dror ba'aretz lechol yoshvea. Bizman shekol yoshvea leha, velo bizman shegalu miksatan. It's only when the entirety of the population is there, but not when there's a portion of the population that is gone. Yachul ayu aleha vein mu'urvim. And even if they are on the land, but they're all mixed up and they're not in their locations, Shevet Binyamin, Biyuda, Shevet Yuda, Binyamin. There's a cross-pollination of all the different shvatim. Yehi Yovel Noheg, you would think that that would work. Tamalomar lechol yoshveha, bizmach yoshveha ketikunan. It's lechol yoshveha, not just lechol, but yoshveha. You have to be in the right place. Below bizmach imein and muravim, now when they're mixed up. So Ezra has the deficit of both of these items. He has number one, that he doesn't have kol yoshveha. And number two is he has them muravim. Even if he has the shvatim, he doesn't have them in their original shvatim, original locations. So how is it possible that if already by Rishon they had terminated counting the yovlot, then how come in the time of Ezra they're counting the yovlot? It doesn't make any sense. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, manu yovlot, lekadesh shmitin. You count the yovlot in order to be mekadesh the shmitin. So this is a very controversial statement which has many ramifications, la'alocha, because it's a question of whether this has application only midrabanan or has an application midoraita. But point is that if you have a series of shmitot, Yovel is the 50th year. The 50th year, you need a placeholder to be there. So even if you're not keeping Yovel midoraita, you still need to put in a placeholder for Yovel. So what it means is manu yovlot, count the yovlot, not because Yovel is doraita, but rather because you need to put in a placeholder for the Shmitin, in order that the Shmitah could then be in its correct time period. Because that's that 49 years, then a Yovel, and then only start the next 49 years after the Yovel. So you need to count the Yovelot, even if you are not going to have Yovel Doraita, just simply to get Shmitah on the right time. Where it says, Anicho the Rabbonon, that works well according to the Rabbonon, Damre Shnat Chamishim Eina Min HaMinyan, that the 50th year is not from the count. Because then you need a placeholder. Ela Rabbi Yehuda Damar Shnat Chamishim Ola Lekan Ulekan, that the Yovel is the first year of the next cycle. Lamali, what do you need a Yovel for? Bishmitin Sagya. So all you need is Shmitin. Then Shmita, you don't need the Yovel at all. You don't need a placeholder. Mar says Avade Loka Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, for sure this is not like Rabbi Yehuda. This brayta that says that they manu Shmitin and Yovelot is definitely not like Rabbi Yehuda, but rather like the Rabbanon, where you need this placeholder of the Yovelot. So now the discussion, we'll start it here, then we'll finish the Gemara and then go back to it with the remainder of the Rishonim. You can see it in Rashi already. Rashi says that there was no Yovel Doraita in Bayit Sheni. In Bayit Sheni, there were not enough people there to be Kol Yoshveha Aleha, and therefore there was never a Yovel Midoraita in Bayit Sheni. And the Shmitim, they kept for Shmita Ksafim and Shmita Takarkot, and they needed to have the Yovel to get the Shmita on the right time. That's how Rashi learns it. We've discussed numerous times the view of the Rabbeinu Tam, who disagrees and says that Yovel was Doraita during Bayit Sheni, and his evidence is the fact that we just had the previous Mishnah in yesterday's daf, that there were many items like Batei Arei Choma and Eved Ivri that are practiced during the time of Bayit Sheni that we said earlier in the Gemara that they are all dependent on the Yovel. So if there's no Yovel, then how can you have these items be in effect? And that means that there must have been a Yovel, and there's a Yovel de Oraita. That forces the Rabbeinu Tam to come up with a big chiddush, which is to say that Kol Yoshveh Aleha does not require the entirety of Bnei Yisrael, just requires a representative for each Shevet, and that representative from each Shevet has to end up in the land where their Shevet was. So he says in the time of Ezra they had that, and that's how they were able to get to Yovel de Oraita. Obviously this Gemara is very difficult for him, because the Gemara seems to say, Manu Yovlot, the Kadesh Shmitim, which is that the only reason they were counting the Yovel was to put Shmita on track. So then why is that the case here if there is a Yovel Midoraita? You counted the Yovelot because you have Yovel Doraita. So the Rabbeinu Tam says this is just a Havamina of the Gemara. The Gemara here is about to change its mind and say that even in the time of the Bayit Rishon, they returned to counting Yovelot Doraita. So this is all before we get to that point. Once we get to that point, the Gemara is going to reject this completely, even though doesn't sound like the Gemara does that. That's what the Rabbeinu Tam suggests in order to overcome that problem. Now the Gemara says, "Velo manu shmitim v'yovlot." Is it really true that at the tail end of Bayit Sheni, they did not keep Yovel? It's shmitim is not really the question, but Yovel They stopped counting the Yovel because they already the Aseret HaShvatim had begun into Galut. V'aktiv, it says in Yirmiyahu, Miketz Sheva Shanim, Tishalchu Ish Et Achiv Ha'ivri Asher Imacher Lecha. Once you reach the end of 7 years, you have to send out your Eved Ivri. The context in which it is said is a speech by Yirmiyahu Navi, criticizing the people of Yerushalayim. They're right now under siege by Bavel, and the king, Tzidkiyahu, comes into creates a covenant with the people that they're finally going to let all their Eved Ivri and Ama Ivriot to go free. They haven't been following the Torah's law. They have not been freeing their Jewish slaves. And now they're finally going to do it. They do it. And about 5 minutes afterwards, when they realize they just lost all their slaves, they take them all back. And they are mevatel what they had done. So Yirmiyahu comes with a message from Hashem that says, you never kept this mitzvah. And now finally you did it. And now you just ruined it. And now you're going to be destroyed. This city's going to be destroyed. And it could be hefker, just like you were supposed to be mafker. Yeah. So in that context, Yirmiyahu Novi says, Miked Sheva Shanim, Tishalchu Ish Et Achiv HaIvri Asher Imacher Lecha. Vavinam Ba. How could that be? Miked Sheva Shanim, at the end of 7 years. An Eved Ivri only has a din, is sent away after working for 6 years. Vaktiv. Here we have a quote from Devarim Tedvav. The truth is that the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu itself says this, and it's actually probably of a contradiction within the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which is Vavadcha Sheva Shanim. The Eved Ivri only works for 6 years. He doesn't go free at the end of the 7th year. The difference is that the 6 years are for an Eved Ivri. In the initial sale, he goes free after 6 years. If he decides that he wants to stay on, and he gets his ear pierced, he's going to stay until the Yovel, then in a situation in which there were only 7 years left of the Yovel, he would go free in the Yovel. And that's what the two statements are there in Yirmiyahu, one about Sheva Shanim and one about Sheish Shanim. When it says, how that wasn't that they were really practicing the Yovel and they should have sent them free in the 7th year. Rather, Yirmiyahu is criticizing them. In all those years previously when you kept the Yovel and the Shemitah, did you set them free? And the answer, it's a rhetorical question, the answer is obviously no. V'aktiv, the problem with that is it says in the psukim there, v'yishme'u, v'yishalechu, that they listened and they sent away their Avadim Ibrahim and their Shvachot Ivriot. And the truth is, it's not really to the in a response to what Yirmiyahu is saying. It is based on the covenant of Tzidkiyahu, and that they did that, and then they were mevatelit and took them back. But in the same vein, it's clear that we're talking about something that's happening right then, that they should have released them, and they weren't releasing them, or they were supposed to release them. El Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so this is the Chiddush here that now takes us back and says that even in the time of Bayit Sheni, there is a return to the counting of the Yovel. Yirmiyahu Chechziran. Yirmiyahu brings back the Aseret HaShvatim at the tail end of Bayit Rishon. Yoshiyahu ben Amon Melech Aleihem. In the time of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, he brings back the Aseret HaShvatim, Uminalan Da'adur. How do we know that's the case? Dichtiv, because it says, Ki Amucher El Amimkar Lo Yashuv. In Yechezkel, it says about the Churban HaBayit, that normally a person who sells land or sells property is upset about the sale, and the buyer is all excited about it. And the Navi says over there that the Mocher El Amimkar Lo Yashuv. He says, don't worry, you shouldn't be happy or sad here, because the one who sells it here is never going to get his property back. Or in essence, he's never going to see a Yovel again that's going to allow him to have his property returned to them, because the land is going to be destroyed before then. Efshar Yovel Batel, Benavimit Nabealav Shei Batel. If the Yovel was not extant anymore, then why is Yechezkel and Navi prophesying that they shouldn't get upset about selling their land because they're never going to see the land again? That implies that had nothing gone wrong, they would have gotten their land back and there would have been a Yovel. Alright, so now we know that Yirmiyahu brought them back, but how do we know that Yoshiyahu HaMelech was the one that ruled over them or was in his time? Dichtiv, because it says, Vayomer ma'atziyun alas asher ani ro'eh. Vayomru elav anshei ha'ir, akever ish ha'elokim, asher bam Yehuda, vayikrat ha'dvarim ha'ele, asher asita al mizbach beit el. Yoshiyahu HaMelech leads a huge tshuva movement in that time period, and in his cleansing of the area, he destroys all the bamot, he destroys all the mizbechot, all the avodah zarah. When he reaches beit el and he's clearing out the area there, he notices that there's a special grave that is marked off in that area. And he asked the local people, what is this grave here? And they say that that's the grave of the Ish HaElokim, the Navi that came and predicted exactly what you're doing over here. And if you go back to Malachim Aleph, Perek Yud, Gimel, Pasuk Bet, Over there is the story of the original Navi that comes at the time of Yerovam ben Nevat, when he puts up the Mizbechot in Beit El and in Dan to worship the Agalim. Over there in that Mizbech in Beit El, when Yerovam is being makriv there, the Navi, or the Isha Lukim, says to him that in the future there's going to be someone who comes here and burns and breaks all these Mizbechot and throws the bones of all the Kohanim on these Bamot, and he predicts exactly what Yoshiyahu HaMelech does. The question is, v'chimativo shel Yoshiyahu b'Beit El. What's Yoshiyahu doing in Beit El? Beit El is part of the northern kingdom, it's not part of Yehuda. So what's he doing over there, clearing things out and leading a tshuva movement? Elek shech ziram Yirmiyahu, Yoshiyahu malach lehen. When Yirmiyahu brought him back, Yoshiyahu ruled over them, and that's why he's in the areas of the northern kingdom, because the Shvatim had come back at that point in time. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Amar Mihocha. You can learn it from here, the pasuk in Hosea that says, Gam Yehuda shat kitzir lach. Even for you, Yehuda, there is a harvest that is awaiting. When I bring back the remnants of my nation, it's not clear here what exactly the limud is. Rashi claims that the word katsir can be sometimes mean katsin, that resh and the nun can be exchanged. And that means that there's going to be a katsin from Yehuda that will rule over the return of the peoples. And the return of the peoples are the aseret shvatim that are brought back. And a king from Yehuda is going to rule over them, and that's Yoshiyahu HaMelech. That's one way to learn it. The Shita Mikubet said over here, note you'd bet, makes another suggestion, which is that it's a negative statement, which is that the area of Yehuda would befall the same fate as the northern kingdom and the Aseret HaShvatim, which is really the context in that perek in Hosea, all the bad things that happen. And it says, Gam Yehuda shat katsir lach. You're too, Yehuda, your time is waiting. There will be a harvest for you. Bad things are going to happen to you, but that will wait till Bishuvish Vutami. Only when the remnants of Klaisol are brought back, only then will it happen. And the idea being that when the Aseret HaShvatim are brought back to the area of Yehuda, that's when the Yehuda will be destroyed. Because shortly after Yirmiyahu brings back the Aseret HaShvatim, then the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed and Yehuda is put into Galut. And that would be the meaning, but again, it would be indicative of the fact that they brought back the Aseret HaShvatim, as well as the fact that someone from Yehuda rules over those areas of the Aseret HaShvatim. The Balei Tosafot over here point out that it's a little strange because we already learned earlier in the Masechta that they only were successful at counting 36 years of that Yovel from the time Yirmiyahu brought them back, and then there was a residual 14 years which take place after the Churban, and that's the Pasuk in Yechezkel that says that 14 years after the Churban, he's standing there and it's a Yovel year. And so that means there was never a Yovel during the time of Yirmiyahu. So then what exactly are they speaking about in Yirmiyahu Perek Lamed Dalet about freeing the slaves if there's never a Yovel that ever bumped into them? And so then, first of all, how do they have the slaves? And then, why was he criticizing them for not freeing them in the Yovel? So the Balei Tosafot say, first of all, there's a possibility that they were already Avadim Ivriim and Shvachot Ivriot from before that point in time, before the Yovel was knocked out, and that's why they should have been freed or why it was relevant. In addition to that, the criticism of the Tochacha of Yirmiyahu was coming because they had entered into a covenant to release them at the time of the Yovel. Not that they literally did release them, but when the Yovel would come, they would release them. And that's what the Gemara is asking the question. Why were they even dealing with releasing a Yovel? How could there be a Yovel? And even though there's never ever a Yovel that actually takes place in this new series of Yovelot, nevertheless, had it been or had they reached the Yovel, they would have needed to free them. And that shows that they were counting Yovelot towards the end of Bayit Rishon. And that's what precipitates the question and the answer that Yirmiyahu brought back the Aseret HaShvatim. Therefore, there was a reinstitution of the Yovel. And this is what the Rabbeinu Tam says, once we know this, then even in Bayit Sheni, we can say the Yovel was the Oraita, just like in the time of Yirmiyahu, they restarted the count and it was the Yovel again. So too, in the time of Ezra, they did the same thing, and they restarted the Yovel based on his understanding that Kol Yoshved doesn't mean everybody, but a representative of each Shevet who lives in their area that Shevet lived before. And therefore, he still thinks that in Bayit Sheni, there was Yovel de Oraita. Now, we just need to discuss what the implications are for us today in terms of the Yovel and what we do or don't need a Yovel in order to know when the Shemitah year is currently. So the Machloket HaRishonim here is actually multi-layered. One issue is whether we paskin like Rabbi or like the Chachamim. Rabbi in the Gemara Gittin in Padaf Lamed Vav says that in order for Shemitah to be Doraita, you need Yovel to be in effect. So the Shemitah is only Doraita when the Yovlot are in effect. The Rabbonan, and Tosafot over here quotes that view of the Rabbonan, that the two are independent. And that you can have Shemitah Doraita, even though you don't have a Yovel Deoraita. So the first hurdle you need to get over is whether we paskin like Rabbi or we paskin like the Chachamim. In addition, you then need to figure out whether we paskin like the Rabbanon or we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. Do we paskin like the Rabbanon that the Yovel is a separate year and not in this cycle of the 49 years of the Shemitah? Or do we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda that the Yovel year is subsumed within the 49 years? And the Yovel year, the 50th year, it's actually the first year of the next cycle. So depending on how you paskin with regards to the Rabbanon and Rabbi, and how you paskin here with the Rabbanon versus Rabbi Yehuda, will then determine what you think needs to happen. In addition, you have to layer on top of that this machloket of Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam as to whether can you have Yovelot Midoraita today, or can you only have Yovel Midorabanan, the view of Rashi, or can you have Yovel Midoraita, the view of the Rabbeinu Tam. So all of those combine to create a series of different opinions amongst the Gaonim and the Rishonim as to what is our practice or what should be our practice today. And it seems from the Gemara here that even when you're counting Shemitot, you still need to have a Yovel as a placeholder. And we know that today we don't do that at all. Our Shemitah just run on 7-year cycles forever. And that's the way that we have our calculation. That's the Mesorah that we have, that we only have Shemitah cycles without any Yovel. So why is it that that is the case? There are two possibilities to explain that practice. One possibility, and this is the view of a number of Rishonim, is that the Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and that the Yovel is subsumed in the Shemitah years, and therefore you don't need to put out an extra year. As we said in this Gemara over here, that this Gemara is not following the view of Rabbi Yehuda, and if you paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, then you don't need to be Mane Yovelot, the Kadesh Shemitin, that you don't need to count the Yovel in order to have the Shemitim. And that would probably make the most sense over here, because that's why our practice is just to count Shemitot and not count the Yovelot. On the other hand, there is a view amongst the Rishonim that we paskin like the Rabbanon, and we do believe that you need a Yovel, but despite the fact that you need a Yovel as a placeholder, that may not be true all the time. And that is either because you do need a Yovel placeholder, even if you're not keeping the Yovel, and then we should have every 50th year, that we should have an extra day, and that's a view amongst the Gonim, that every 100 years you have to put in 2 placeholders for the Yovelot, and if you don't do that, your Shemitah years are going to be off. But there's another view, which is that the requirement for having a placeholder of the Yovel is only true when you're actually counting the Yovel. And that might require a Beit Din, it might require the Beit HaMikdash. And so there is a view that develops amongst the Rishonim and brought by the Kesef Mishnah and the Rambam, explaining that during the time when the Beit was extant, then this Din of Manu Yovelot, the Kadesh Mitim, was applicable, because Beit Din was counting the Yovelot, and therefore you needed a placeholder for the Yovelot. But once there was a Churban HaBayit, and the Beit Din was no longer counting the Yovelot, and there was no longer a Din of Yovel, which is associated with the Kedushat HaAretz and the Kedushat HaMikdash, at that point in time, the Yovel was no longer a relevant part of the counting of the Shemitot, and the Shemitah would be independent of the Yovel.
And the logic behind that would be that when it comes to the Yovel, when we're practicing the Yovel, over there it makes sense to segregate it, delineate it separately from the Shemitah, because the Kedushat Yovel is distinct from the Kedushat Shemitah. On the other hand, today, where even if we were keeping the Yovel, it would not be distinct, there would be no Kedushat to it, it'd be no different than any other year of the Shemitah year, then it doesn't make sense to segregate it or delineate it separately, and therefore we would subsume it in the count of the Shemitah years.
So in that way, we're positing like the Chachamim, that Shemitah is independent of the Yovel. On the other hand, we say that you do need the Yovel in order to count the Shemitah, but that's not all the time. So in that way, we can paskin like the Rabbanan, the Yovel is actually the 50th year and not part of the count. But despite the fact today, we're not going to count the Yovel because it's post the Churban HaBayit, or post the time when Beit Din is counting for the Yovelot. And for that reason, we just count cycles of 7 through and through without having any Yovel. And not because we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. It could be that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, and if you believe that, then the reason we're counting 7 and 7 and 7 is because the Yovel doesn't require a placeholder at all. But that leads to the practice that we have today, again, that we only keep Shemitah cycles one after the next. We don't put in a Yovel placeholder. And then there were multiple Mesorot as to what is the right count for the Shemitah year. And even though the Rambam, again, comes up with a different count or a different calculation, he does something amazing there where he defers to the view of the Gaonim, that is a different count. That really sways the view amongst the Rishonim that even though we have multiple Mesorot,
it seems that they coalesced around what would be the most likely count based on the Gaonim, and therefore we today only keep one Shemitah year, even though there is probably a Safek of the Shemitah year in every year of the Shemitah, according to some of the Rishonim. Nevertheless, we've come to an agreement based the same way that the Rambam did, was coalescing around a single view that that is the Shemitah. And then the Yovel issue over there, most possibly like Rashi, and not like the Rabbeinu Tam, that you need Kol Yoshvei Aleha, and the Ramban, it says that the Rabbeinu Tam's explanation seems far-fetched, but he does say that the Rabbeinu Tam's questions are very strong, and that what do you do about the fact that Hillel was dealing with the Batei Arei Chumah during Bayit Sheni, or that was Eved Ivri during Bayit Sheni? He gives answers over there, either saying that that was only Midr Rabbanan, or he suggests that maybe some of these issues were left over from a previous time that they were dealing with them during the time of Bayit Sheni, but they weren't actually from the time of Bayit Sheni. But he goes out to answer those problems of the Rabbeinu Tam, but is very supportive of Rashi's view that you need Kol Yoshvei Aleha in order for it to be the Uraita.
He also makes that distinction that we noted before, that there may be a difference between Zman HaBayit, when it makes sense to put in a place order for Yovel because it's relevant, versus post the Churban HaBayit, when we're not really the owners of the land, and there's no Shava Chuzato, so none of that makes sense, and therefore the practice of the Yovel, even Midibrahem, doesn't make so much sense. Even though he does quote that from Josephus, that he happens to mention that during the kings of the Chashmonaim, that they were actually practicing the Yovel, which would be very supportive of the view of the Rabbeinu Tam. Elim Kane, you say that that is Midrabanan.
And again, we've noted many times that we're getting closer to that effect where the majority of Jews in the world are living in Eretz Yisrael, which would then trigger the need maybe to have Yovel Midoraita. The problem that might still exist is whether you have a requirement that you have Shvatim Bim Koman, you have all the Shvatim there, and Shvatim Bim Koman, in Kol Yoshvea, as well as the fact that who is going to be and when are you going to start that count, that would obviously lead to much controversy, but we are reaching that threshold which would then change over the fact that Shemitah today, which is Shemitah Derabanan, would then turn into Shemitah Doraita, because if we paskin like Rabbi that there's a correlation between them, then once you have Yovel, which is being driven Doraita, then Shemitah would turn Doraita as well. If you believe that we paskin like the Chachamim and there's no correlation between them, then you have to explain why today Shemitah is Derabanan and not Doraita. Does that mean like the Raiva that was Kedusha Rishona and Shnia were Nitbatla, and therefore you can't get to a level of Doraita at all because you need a new Kedusha, which we don't have?
Anyway, I sent out the Mikorot so one can look into this more in depth and understand the question as to whether the Ovel should be counted, when it should be counted, and as to whom we paskin like.
Okay, we're going to end here by the Mishnah in the middle of Lamed Gimel, Amud Aleph.